Public Safety and Security. We have three members present, Legislator Nona, Legislator Burton, and myself, and we have our guest here, Commissioner Tony Sutton. We just wanted to try to get a brief overview and update on the department, especially as it regards emergencies, find out how the emergency system is working at Entergy. And then there was a question from finance about the Motorola contract extension for first responder radio system, and he's going to give us an update on what's happening with that. And then we'll approve the minutes. And we'll be out of here before budget needs the room.
Great.
Welcome, Commissioner.
Good morning. Good morning. So just a brief overview. There's a number of big topics that are going on at the moment. Let me just address the radio system real quick. The reason we came back for an extension was that, in spite of the fact that it's a very long contract, we did recently have an audit done of all of the transmitter sites that are associated with the system. And it was a very diligent effort on the part of an outside reviewer who went so far as to write down every single cable that wasn't labeled at each transmitter site. And basically it was what we were looking for so that we're not left scratching our head going forward. It's an extremely complicated system with literally 10,000 separate connections in these transmitter sites. So we did experience some quality assurance problems with installation. That's why we have this gentleman who came in. That was one of the reasons. Those corrective actions are still in process, and I didn't want to release Motorola from their contract. Okay. The second reason is we have almost 2,000 subscriber radios in this system at the moment, and I asked for a overall inventory reconciliation by serial number as to where each and every one of these were. And only within the last month have they been able to give us a sheet, and finally it came down to the fact that they were about 13 radios short. And these radios are over $3,000 a piece. They're probably almost $4,000. I think they're $3,600 or $3,900 each. So they wound up having to replace them. We now have those radios. And probably the last biggest item that caused us to leave this open was, I think you're all familiar with the firefighters wearing the straps on the, and carrying mm-hmm. portable radios next to them. Now, normally they carry keys also. They'll carry elevator keys. Carry box keys. Yeah. They'll carry panel keys. They'll carry Knox box keys. Mm-hmm. There's a number of, typically you see a ring. And what we discovered from a couple of users was that as they had the microphone up and they walked mm-hmm. down a hallway, the keys rattling so close to the radio were giving them interference in the radio. And Motorola claimed that that was the first time they had ever heard it, so we went around and around and around for a while, and we actually demonstrated it for them on a number of occasions. They took a radio, sent it back to the factory, had the engineers look at it. They developed a solution. They sent back a couple of radios for us to test. We used them. We accepted the solution. And now Motorola is in the process of going to each of the departments that we gave the radios to with a box of replacement radios. And they take the individual programming off the radios that are put it in the loaners. They're actually loaners. And they give them, and they send the other ones back to the factory, replace some boards in the portables, reprogram them, and deliver them back. And then they come and swap them out. And they're moving through the multitude of radios, portable radios that are out there. That's still an open item. And I'm not going to stop a contract until we get, you know, through all of those portables. The last thing I want is Motorola to not have the motivation to get this done quickly. And the motivation is the fact that there's still a considerable balance of money that has not been paid to them, and I don't want to pay it. Now, my history with this system started when I first came to the county, mm-hmm. but it really, the project was so bogged down about 4 years ago that the deputy county executive took it over himself and ran it, and after one of the meetings, he called me in and he said, congratulations, the project's yours, and from here on out, it's your responsibility to get it done. So I...
You've been trying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm holding their feet to the fire. Now, as far as performance goes, the system has absolutely surpassed any of our wildest expectations.
It has.
Okay. Absolutely. And I just want to reiterate.
Yes, I knew you that said because there have been some people who have said it hasn't been working.
I would really
we made these available, excuse me for interrupting, we made these available in different departments, especially along the Sound Shore and everything, right? This
we
is
gave,
the ones we gave to...
We gave...
I like the Toyotas.
A portable radio... Oh, let me back up. We put a mobile radio at the county's expense... Good morning. At the county's expense... In every single piece of fire apparatus, frontline fire apparatus, mm-hmm. every single chief's car, every single ambulance, every single paramedic fly car, every single police headquarters, every single hospital emergency department.
What about the feline buses?
They're in the feline buses. There are mobiles in the Department of Health's response vehicles, our vehicles. In addition, we gave out the portable radio. So, you know, this contract, if you look at it, and gentlemen, it was not my idea. I'm not taking credit for it.
No, I know.
But for the budget that this system was allocated and the task that we reached and are almost done with, it is a fraction of the cost of similar systems. Rockland County is engaged now in a $35 million system, and it's very similar to what we're doing with not nearly as many radios. So I think you can see that every single one of them. Now, imagine almost 2,000 radios out there, 5 complaints of coverage since it was turned on September 10th of 2008.
Okay.
It really, and we encourage everybody to give us any kind of indications. We actually had one department that was complaining that they had poor coverage, so I sent a uninvolved installation company out there to do an audit on what was done to their department. They found bad antenna connections. They found speakers that were facing
the wrong way.
They found a number of other problems that they corrected, and I have not heard a word from them since.
And this last amendment doesn't cost us anything, right?
No.
This is just another
It's
amendment.
An extension of the deadline.
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't want to let them off the hook.
I don't, because it's Motorola, and the only thing that's kept them engaged in this is the fact that we do have a balance there. And I don't want to...
How much do they still get off this 11.9?
We actually have to go through an audit of that because there's a considerable amount of training money in there, and we have to go through and see what we need in terms of...
Oh, it's actually gone up to 13.8, right?
Oh, it's 13.8.
It's 13.8 altogether with all of the...
And this is what they were saying. How come we have up to 13, 14 amendments? Each amendment costs us extra money.
But I guess I should relate some of the challenges that have caused those change orders, and I'll be brief, but... I'll give you some examples. There's a site in Ossining where we signed a lease with Verizon, apparently, for a space. And when we were ready to go in there, our radio techs went there and found someone else occupying the same space, and Verizon had, in fact, rented the same space to 2 separate people, and they got there first. So we wound up having to go back and put another shelter in. In Port Chester, we signed an agreement with United Hospital. We signed it on Wednesday. On Friday, they announced their bankruptcy.
Oh, God.
So then we started all over Portchester and went up on the water tanks up on Summit Avenue. But, you know, that was a whole new process of going to the water company cold and asking them for cooperation. There wasn't another stick on that entire place. And 6 months in the zoning board in Portchester. So, when you look at all of these change orders and everything else, it was all for these kinds of modifications along the way, and there were many of them. There really were. The interesting thing in terms of economies, I think you probably remember that the police also did a radio project for what was called the F1 frequency and F3. F1 was their primary. F3 was the countywide frequency that they installed so they could use it for when they called for mutual aid or when they got engaged in activities that crossed a number of lines. We actually realized a lot of economies because we did a lot of the radio installations and tower climbs simultaneously. In other words, we hired one vendor, and when he climbed, he put our antenna up for my project and public safety's antenna up for their project and did both installations. So instead of two separate trips, two separate climbs.
I think you gave us an antenna report one time. It's not you climbed it.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
And we have sites.
In terms of different sites.
One of the, if you remember, one of the most recent changes that we did to the contract was putting in fire suppression and security systems at the trunk sites, the remote ones, Mountain Lakes, Dunwoody, Grasslands, all of the sites, putting in these FM 200 non-water, non-toxic fire suppression systems. You can imagine how delicate this equipment is, and if you hit it with water, you're going to replace every bit of it. If you hit it with a corrosive dry powder, you're going to replace everything. This is FM 200 is basically a substance that eats the oxygen. So it consumes all of the oxygen in the room, puts the fire out by snuffing it. And, obviously, it's not conducive to life, so if there's people in there, we have to get them out quickly, yeah. But it saves the equipment.
Good. While we're on equipment and stuff, does anybody have any questions?
Yeah. What's the status of the food bank warehouse?
Let's just finish up this Motorola radio.
Oh, I thought we did.
Yeah, no. Does anyone? I've been joined by legislators Ryan and Myers, and I just wanted to. We talked about the Motorola radio extension. It's at no cost, and Tony was telling us that the reason he wants to extend it is there are some little things that we still have to get done by Motorola, and he doesn't want to let them off the hook. And we've gone through the whole system change and why we've done it. Do we have any questions on that issue? There being none, let's go to.
Do we need to approve this?
No. It was brought up by finance, and I didn't know if they wanted to hold it up, so we didn't hold it up at ANC.
Oh.
And I had asked Tony to just come in and kind of go over why.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've gotten a satisfactory answer. More than
there was also some talk about Haiti that we were concerned about what we were doing in terms of response to Haiti.
Yeah, that was the other thing in terms of our, what is our emergency? Because when we talked about the response, I know you were quick to get out the phone numbers and get out the correct organizations to which people should make contributions. And people asked me, how come we don't have a team that went down like New York City? And I said, there are certain things that we do have and certain things we don't. And I recall that when we had Katrina, there was a question of authorized bill, you can remember, sure, $1 million that we couldn't spend it all. And we had a group go down with a plane that was volunteered to take them. And I think we said if anything does come up our way, but we did send, it was my recollection, somewhere or other, the county got involved in medical supplies and stuff.
Yeah, in this case.
And in Haiti, I just said the basic thing we could do is donate our money
Yeah. In this case, you know, if you were challenging somebody at an exercise, a tabletop exercise, and you gave them almost an impossible situation to help, this would be it.
Okay.
The only thing that did that I would have probably thrown in is I would have made the airstrip initially unusable. But if you look at the challenges they had no port. And they really, they started out with a country with 40% unemployment, 40% AIDS rate. I mean, it just, I don't know if you realize it, but the almost a very big portion of their gross national product comes from donations made by Haitians in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is just a poor country. Hit not this year, but 2 years ago with three hurricanes. I mean, just if you wanted to talk about getting pounded back to, you know, almost the beginning, that's what it was. So the initial thing here, and then complicated by the fact that we have no control over it. It's not a U.S. territory. It's not
America always responds.
Just so, I mean, for them to even just do the initial response, they had to get permissions from Cuba to fly through their airspace. You know, it sounds like it's something that's a no-brainer, but unless you give the courtesy, then you wind up with real big problems. So it was a logistical nightmare, but the bottom line is, in my estimation, when I looked at the situation from day one, I absolutely realized that the only thing that's going to straighten that out is a military operation.
Mm-hmm.
You need that discipline. The first thing they had to do was take over the airport and kick everybody who was a gawker out and say, listen, you know, the only thing we're going to do is the basic missions here. And their initial message was water, food, medical supplies,
thank you.
Some kind of shelter, whether it's tents, whatever they could do for the people.
Mm-hmm.
But so, you know, for us to collect supplies or to collect durable goods with the anticipation that they would ever make it there was really probably not the best idea. But if you look at, you know, one of the byproducts of this, of our society is it's instantaneous news now.
Okay, thank you.
And it almost seemed as if the reporters were there long before any help arrived. And, you know, they had literally had the people dying in the streets or dead in the streets, and they literally had the people holding their hands out. And for people in my business, that's what we do. So how do you control yourself from not saying, my God, somebody's got to do something. Why isn't somebody doing something?
Yeah.
But, you know, over time, I've learned that it's, you know, the right people have to be there first. In terms of long term, I'm sure at some point in time, and when I say long term, I'm talking this is going to be a generational process here, at the very least.
Yeah.
So they're going to need eventually durable goods. There's going to be those definite requests for specific things that you just can't get down there. You know, and my real deal is that this is not a, you know, this isn't a marathon. This is going to be forever, and we can't really just throw everything at it and then turn our backs on it. So in time, it'll help. But right now, the organizations that are adept at doing this kind of stuff and already have the ties with the federal government, the Red Cross, Doctors Without Borders, AmeriCares, all of those large organizations that do this and are ready to go, they have palletized stuff. They know where to get their stuff and how to get it there, and it's all about logistics. You know, people see people shrink wrapping pallets of stuff. Well, I think you know that the military usually doesn't do anything like anybody ever else does. So when they put this stuff in those planes, very often it has to be unpacked and containerized the way they do, so they pull it on the skids and they lock it in with their lock systems in the planes. So there's a tremendous amount of work. I could tell you that from Katrina, from 9/11, tremendous amount of stuff was put in landfills. Tremendous amount. first into warehouses and then into landfills, or to private non-governmental organizations after the fact. For those of you who went to see Katrina, I'm sure you saw it. Some of this stuff was dumped on the side of the road down there because they couldn't get in. They couldn't get close. Now, in terms of teams going down, you have to remember that the group of rescuers that go in, there's not an option somewhere to go to a Holiday Inn and then travel a little distance and get to the scene.
No.
So when they come in, they not only have to be there, but they have to be self-sufficient for almost their entire mission, if not their entire mission.
And they have to have somebody secure the equipment.
Absolutely. It's all about that.
Yeah,
so
no, I saw that all of that.
Those were federal teams. They were not New York City teams.
Okay.
That's NY1 and NY2 are the urban search and rescue teams. Those are FEMA teams that are organized and trained long beforehand.
Good.
So the New York City teams are made up of firefighters, cops, and EMS workers that are part of this beforehand. They've got all their vaccinations, they've got their passports, they've got their uniforms, their training. I mean, they're ready to go. Includes canines, includes everything. I don't know the exact number of them around the country, but you saw that there were teams there from North Carolina,
yeah.
There were teams there from around the country, and those teams are all picked strategically. The other thing that happened right out of the gate was they activated a number of DMORT teams, mortuary assistance teams. These are undertakers. Again, this is a federally sponsored team under FEMA. They're all over the country. And they activated them to go down and process. They were all staged. They were in Florida. They actually moved them to Florida. DMAT teams, we have one here. New York 2 is the team that's associated with the medical center. Certain DMAT teams from around the country were activated and sent to to Atlanta and stayed in Atlanta in hotels for probably a week waiting to be able to get time to go down there. Now, I heard the other day that the Air Force has got the operation at the airport running so smoothly they land 160 planes a day.
Down there?
Wow.
They have one runway.
Yeah.
They have a specific on the ground time. Land a plane, taxi here.
Unload.
Make sure you have enough fuel for your entire mission because we can't refuel you, and a refreshed crew, and right back out again. And so they're doing it. But when you look at what that was going to take somebody starting at the airport and actually pushing their way back in.
Yeah.
And it takes CVs.
Yeah. Yeah.
It takes heavy construction equipment.
Mm-hmm.
People think that the ship, the Comfort, why wasn't it there in a couple days?
It's going to sell.
It was there 10 days later or whatever.
Yeah.
It's 1,000 patients, the capacity. And when you think about that, that rivals huge metropolitan
hospitals.
There's only a few things they can't do. They can't do transplants. They can't do a couple of other really serious things. They can do. They can treat burn patients. They can do neurosurgery on the boats. I mean, but what happened? And over the weekend, you probably all saw the headlines about now we have a standoff where they stopped the military evacuation of the hospitalized people. They brought a lot of them into Florida. Now, last week we were getting little tickles from the state saying, okay. You guys all still remember your MMRS. No, it's not MMRS. What is it, Tony? What the MNS. The MNS. And what the MNS is a system that was set up quite some time ago to evacuate large amounts of war casualties stateside. And we have actually participated in drills, and these drills specify either like McGuire or Stewart, and you bring a task force of ambulances up and the military lands and offloads these patients, then you disseminate them into your medical systems because the military facilities can't handle them. The problem with that in this case was that Florida was quickly overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And what they were doing was the people on the Comfort that had had their surgery, the amputees, the burn patients, needed that long-term care. They need prosthesis, they need, you know, rehab, and the burn patients need grafts and you know, long-term care. So they were evacuating them, not only to make room on the Comfort, but the fact that they weren't meant to be a long-term facility. They were meant to be the crisis place. And Florida, you know, was quickly overwhelmed, but the big problem was when they evacuated them, they brought the immediate family with them. Mm-hmm. And to be able to assimilate them in and process them, there was no money stream, no trail associated with it. So it was killing Florida and overwhelming their systems. So as I said, we started getting tickled last week about, you know, don't forget your plan, we may mobilize your... Be ready for the call, was what we were told. And then there was, we were told we were going to get a brief by HHS and DOD, and they didn't call. You know, as I understand it, there's a lot of discussion in Albany about Medicaid benefits, and I know there was a conference call scheduled for Friday between the State Health Department and hospital CEOs that was postponed, that was talking about could your institutions take some of these people. But again, you know, that's a long-term overwhelming cost for this country, and somebody's got to have to be able to guarantee reimbursement.
I know one of the discussions last time was also Camp Smith, because it's got buildings and theaters and, mm-hmm. and restaurant, chapel.
We stood up Camp Smith
yeah.
For Katrina.
Right.
And it was the weekend that I was going to Lake George, just for the weekend.
Okay.
And the plan was that the evacuees from Katrina would come into Stewart and then be taken to Lake George to be processed and then distributed to the metropolitan area. And I remember distinctly, deciding whether I should go or whether I should stay or whether I should go or whether I should stay. And literally on that time up there, I got three separate phone calls. I was going and I got off a ramp and turned around to come back because they're coming.
And then
they called and said, no, they're not coming. The flights were postponed till next week. So I turned around and started heading north. And then we were wrong. They're actually in the air. They're on their way here. They may actually already be on the ground. So I turned around and started to come back again. Then they said, then the message I got was, no, they actually, when they were told on the plane, after they closed the door, where they were going, they refused to go. And they wanted to get back off the plane, which is what FEMA experienced at that point.
Yeah.
Mm. They put people
yeah.
from Louisiana on a plane and said, we're going to take you places. There were actually some people who were taken to Anchorage, Alaska.
Oh,
I swear
my God.
To God.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
a lot of them went to Houston.
So the idea now is that they don't want to move them too far into the country unless they absolutely have to. So that's Haiti.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody have any questions? Any other emergencies?
How do you feel about if they do the terrorist trial in Newburgh, New York? Are we too close to Newburgh?
No, personally, I think to. Give them the respect and allow them to avail themselves of our legal system is wrong, period.
It should be down in Guantanamo.
And it's just, it's, I mean, I know it's an idealistic thing that we want to give them every chance, but this is, you know, these people are martyrs and they would love nothing else but to be martyred.
Yeah.
So if you bring them here, you could make him a martyr, and you could wipe out all these people, and the media would already be there to watch the entire thing anyway. So,
and you make him somebody else who would be a prospective terrorist.
I just, or something. And you'll get the backlash too. So I just, That's how I feel about that.
I agree with you. Tony, and I'm on record, no problem. Go ahead, Bill.
I'm not going to start a debate.
No, I know. You're the litigator. I'm just an ex-Navy man who agrees with a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, there are obviously a lot of issues that could be debated. One of the things, though, and you know, I certainly thank you because you've been on top of things for years in your position as commissioner over there, and
immediate issues.
It's been a real key reason why we seem to be always prepared to respond in the county to any one of a number of different things that comes up in the area of emergency response. But one of the things, a natural question, I guess, having to do with the trials and the discussion of Orange County and Newburgh, is the discussion of use of this facility over here. And of course, that causes
the federal courthouse.
Yeah,
I agree, that's ridiculous.
All of us to be concerned. Mm-hmm. Is that a real possibility?
I can tell you that I have no knowledge of anybody even doing scouting on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure at some point we'd be brought into it, but I would think it would cripple the city.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Well, the only thing that
they did have it on the news though.
It's more than just Channel 12. It's a history of them using this as a venue for cases that they don't want downtown. Mm-hmm. That they have felt that, and over the years they have brought some rather high profile cases over here. So it's not beyond.
No, it's not out of the question.
Yeah, out of the question for somebody down there to get the bright idea of saying, well, we're going to use this place.
Yeah. I would think that the first thing they do is reach out to public safety and corrections.
And corrections.
They're going to need some real security, but I really don't have any knowledge.
We did have John with some other questions some issue questions. With all due respect, John, I apologize for getting into some of the other stuff.
We have 10
minutes. That's all right.
I'll talk fast and keep it short.
The food bank warehouse, what's the status of that, if any?
We were very close to, I think you, as you know, I think actually Andrew Newman back in November and December was trying to prep you guys that we were coming. And then I think with the election that the county executive had, decided to leave that kind of
the aegis of the new.
It's just to wait and see what the new administration's feeling would be.
But you haven't heard anything from the new administration?
No, actually, I only was able to just discuss it briefly with the deputy county executive when we were talking about different plans, and I gave him a list of the capital projects that were still, on the drawing board, so to speak, in my department.
What else do you have on the drawing board, Kevin?
We have my building renovation. Mm. We have the construction of the design of the strip mall, the fire training mall in the back.
Right.
And I have one open project in the backyard for pumps and green hydrants. But other than that, everything else is really pretty clean.
You envision many cuts in your department?
I do. I think we're all gonna need to do more with less and tighten up. I can't imagine that we're going to be able to make cuts to make up for the shortfall without actually cutting back some programs and some people. It just doesn't strike me as being possible. There's no question that we were already running as lean as possible because that was the mandate for the last several years. And the only thing I can say is thank God for my grants, because my grants have helped a lot. Mm-hmm.
Do you see any changes in the fire safety training programs that you have?
I would think that, I've been on the circuit going around to all the different groups just saying, don't panic. I recognize the core missions of the department were always fire training and 60 control. That's where we started, and that's, as we retreat back to our ability to engage in some of the other stuff. What I would say is that I think you might see some decrease in the frequency with which we offer courses. We have historically each year clocked more Firefighter 1 classes than anyone else in the state of New York. And when you look at that, that's a very intense labor load for me. It's using hourly instructors, and at night up to 7 or 8 of them when we're associated with live burns out in the backyard, or if we're doing mass confidence, because it requires so many safety officers and so many people inside and outside to watch what's going on. So, I mean, I honestly think that, you know, we may go and look to tone that back to maybe starting 1 a month instead of 2 or 3 a month. You know, we're going to watch it closely and see the impact, because if we have a large backload, then maybe we want to do less other courses. Maybe we want to do less elevator safety courses or less pump operators or something, and switch more of the focus to just getting the firefighter ones done.
Well, on 60 control, are there any opportunities to expand the use of that to more communities?
That's a double-edged sword. I would think that more and more communities will come to us automatically now because they're facing the same budget problems, and if they look at an ability to lose some operational costs, whether it's the ability to take an officer out of a desk position and move him into the field, and they look at what we have in terms of what's available, I think we're going to find out that they're going to come to us. The problem with that is obviously staffing. I think you remember, and I could certainly get you the exact stats, but in 2004, we did 45,000 dispatches. In 2009, we did 91,000 dispatches, and I only had 2 more positions. Those 2 positions were actually added starters that we were able to put in, because you remember me so many times coming here saying that most of my communication operators are waiting on lists to become firefighters or police officers or those types of professions. So when one of them gets called, that's a list, and it takes literally a year to fill that person's position. By the time you train them, and you screen them and hire them and train them, and they can sit there by themselves as a communication operator. It's a year.
How many dispatchers do you have now?
26.
Nice. And how many communities?
To give you the rough figures, about 45% of the fire services, 45 to 55%, and about 30% of the EMS agencies, 100% of the mutual aid.
Right. 100%.
Right. Your stats are on primary. Yeah. Just primary dispatch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we do secondary dispatch too, which means we may actually take the call and dispatch the department, but then they pick it up as soon as they man their house. Or they take their guys who are normally their dispatchers, and if they get a second call, they'll put them on the road, and we take the second call and run the second call for them. We have been over-accommodating it over the years, and so we're a victim of extending that courtesy, because everybody knows we do it. So.
Jen, do we have any more? Because we're going to have to wrap it up to make the room available for budget.
You know, just the point.
Wait.
We have to look at this closely, and of course the commissioner does. I mean, we, in fact, you and I in particular, we came in at a time when dispatchers numbered in the teens.
Yep.
And people were putting in 24, 36 hours a pop. I was public safety commissioner at the time, and we'd have to go over there and visit when, I mean, bad weather conditions, ice storms, and all that were locking people in, and they were bug-eyed looking at screens, and they had this tremendous responsibility of responding to calls, of marshaling resources, and dispatching them. And after a while, you wondered how people in that condition could possibly do it, and it had gone unattended for years, and you were working on the other side of it, the EMS side,
right,
in the community, so you fellas had a chance to
see firsthand.
And so you look at the strides that this board has made in putting emphasis on the need to enhance that operation, to make sure it was properly staffed, so all aspects of emergency services could be in good shape in this county. Ultimately, we went to the department, which Tony sits at the head of today. So I would just urge the committee for our board to be to obviously mm-hmm. continue to be very careful in how we evaluate changes in what has been a one of our important top performers in
right.
in the government operation, and in particular within the central charge, within the mission of the county.
Bill, one last question.
The dead spot issue. Are we now 100% coverage, or do we still have a couple of
No, I can assure you that it's absolutely impossible to have 100% coverage. What we were shooting for was 90% coverage 90% of the time on the street to the mobile radio, not to the portable radio. We've surpassed that. We actually, I don't know if you've heard any complaints from your constituents, but we actually just were licensed by the FCC. We're going to raise the tower at Maryknoll, about 25 feet, and we're gonna go up. Actually, we're not doing it. Verizon is doing it for us because they want to put additional cells on mm-hmm. it.
We're going to be where on the tower?
Top.
We're at the top.
Okay. Yes.
And that will help, not particularly in where we've had the dead spots, which you're walking.
It will. See. The only thing that's going to eradicate every single one of those spots is to go to Rockland County.
Well, I thought we were going to do either a recoil off of Rockland or actually set up a transmitter there.
Transmitter.
And has that ever gone forward?
We looked at it, and quite honestly, the experience and the coverage that we had and the lack of complaints, and I don't know if you're aware of any that I'm not aware of, but I have not heard of any along the river at all. We stopped short of spending, which would be probably another $1.5 million, to build with Rockland. They're building at Helen Hayes. I don't know if you're familiar with that facility over there, but it's up on the hill, north of Nyack Hospital, looking this way. It would give us the ability to build out a site. I would certainly consider it if someone could document, ongoing and serious problems. But the most I've heard are 100 feet, 200 feet, and I'm really being honest with you when I tell you the other day, during our problems last week, which was I think Wednesday or Thursday, I can't even remember now, when we had that terrible commute in the morning.
Thursday.
It was encouraging for me to hear on the radio. Get off 4626 and go to the trunk. We can't talk on this channel, which was the problem they had in the old days. Was it was like a party
line.
Everybody wanted to talk at once. You know, on a trunk channel, you have almost unlimited options to be able to go into separate battalion talk groups or even drill down further. So it's something that we would consider if I had enough documentation of a problem, but I don't have that at the moment.
Yeah, I've not had any complaints from either Austin or Brian that I'm aware of.
Even the ambulances approaching Phelps, which is a real concern of ours, have not had problems reaching. The only times I've ever heard them have a problem is like when a medic's in the back of an ambulance trying to use a portable instead of using a mobile.
Thank you, Tony. If anything does come up, please give us a call.
And I would really,
I sent out all the members' names and phone numbers to each of the commissioners. Yep. If you can't get hold or something we all need to know about,
call us,
because we do have, John and Bill, and Bill have been involved in firefighting. You know, I have my family history and police and everything. So, it's important that we be kept abreast of anything major that comes up. And I want to thank you for taking right away the emergency information out to the public and to the county executive and to Ken and I in terms of the, press conference and making sure we had everything done properly.
And I will absolutely always, as always,
be happy
to host an early morning breakfast if it's better for you, schedules, if you want to come out and make a visit.
We can do it.
We'll do coffee and bagels.
That'd be nice.
I got a notice this weekend about an upcoming airport.
I didn't get that yet.
Yeah. No, I got it. We've got a local cert.
You're doing another emergency?
What we're going to do is a drill at the airport. Right. It's in the planning process now, and I was fortunate enough to be able to get it qualified for grant money, so hopefully there will be no
county.
What's the likely, what's the time?
You need, and you
May
need volunteers
1st. It's in May.
As victims?
May 1st is the day.
You want to be a victim?
Absolutely, if you want to be a victim.
Judy would be carried away.
Dress warmly. Because May 1st is kind of one of those days that could go either way.
Ketchup on yourself.
Bill and I will stand in front of the
actually, we have much better than ketchup. We have some moulage that you would think it was real.
I came to the last one. It was awfully impressive.
You'll notify us of that.
Yes, he will.
I'll keep you posted.
We'll make sure we all are notified in the whole of legislation. We just have one set of minutes, if I can.
Yes, second.
Moved by Mr. Burton, seconded by Mrs. Myers. All those in favor of the minutes unchanged?
Aye.
Aye. John, approve the minutes? Aye. The minutes are approved.
Right.
We have a motion to adjourn. So moved by Judy Myers, seconded by Mr. Burton. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We stand adjourned. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
Before everybody leaves, quick question. I gather the town's insurance, at least Mount Pleasant did, opened up its insurance programs to volunteer firemen.